Hey, all you pet stylists, you found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from Tucson, Arizona, and groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hello, groomers. Hi, Susie. Here we go again.
Welcome, bienvenue. Welcome. Welcome to episode 222 of the Groom Pod, recorded on September 1st, 2019 in Snohomish, Washington and Tucson, Arizona. This podcast is brought to you by listener support through Amazon and Patreon and through our kind sponsors, Best Shot, Stazco, Show Season, Evolution Shears, and Barkley HQ. This week on the Groom Pod, we're talking Bichon Heads, Ketoconazole, and when to pay the vet bill. We're going to get to it. I swear we're going to get to it. Anyway.
Yeah, this is our third time listing that as a topic, so we better get to it.
I edited it out the first time. The second time I left it in, but of course we didn't do it and confessed it at the end. But this time, Barbara, we're going to get to it. But not before I tell you about our new sponsor, Barkley HQ. Barkley HQ, spelled B-A-R-K-L-E-Y. HQ is a cloud-based software system for your salon. It's got everything you need to run and manage your grooming business in one spot online. It offers booking and scheduling, client management with fully customizable records, including handling client communications and reminders. It has point of sale and inventory, staffing and accounting, and it integrates with popular software. The detailed reports help you guide your business to become more profitable. They are set up for multiple locations, and they have super-duper great customer service. So if you guys are looking for new software, they offer a 14-day free trial by going to the website www.barkleyhq.com. That's B-A-R-K-L-E-Y-H-Q. Their email information is info@barkleyhq.com. Or if you prefer the old-fashioned method, you can give them a call at 416-678-8171. Barkley HQ, a great software system. All right. How was your week?
I had a major event yesterday that I need to share.
Oh, well, good, because nothing happened down in my world.
Well, before I get into that, I want to say a good thing that I discovered.
Yeah.
And I've been kind of like thinking that maybe this would work. I discovered that my IVAC hose will extend all the way from the back room to the new location of my table in the front.
Well, that's pretty cool.
So that's good, because one of the things I gave up when I moved my table from beside the tub into the center room where I'm kind of by myself is that I lost my ability to use the IVAC on any dog I wanted. So I've been using the IVAC only when I would go into the back room and use Yvonne's table for the doodles or the big dogs or an occasional cocker clip down. I never cut off the hose to fit the situation in the back room. So now I have this ton of hose, and it reaches all the way over the little half gate to my table, and not as fully accessible to my table as I would like, but it's usable. I did a whole groom on that. I have to move the dog to the clippers, but hey, that's a big event. That was a really nice discovery.
That's funny. My canine two hose, I can dry dogs outside of my trailer. I really should cut the end of that off. Yeah, it's helpful, yeah, actually.
I know. I should have, I've had that thing for years and years, and I'm just like never cut off some of the hose, and now I'm so glad I didn't. Okay, so that was a good thing, but let me tell you what happened yesterday. So perhaps you will recall that I've been grooming a Scotty named Willis that belongs to a family of dogs that I've groomed for over 10 years. And they had a Scotty that we groomed, and he passed away, and they bought a new puppy, and they didn't bring the new puppy in right away. They kept saying, well, he's not ready, well, he's not ready. And then he was over 6 months old when he came in, and he started doing a lot of bad behaviors on the grooming table, mouthy, jumpy, jerky, you know, puppy kinds of stuff. And I tried a number of ways of restraining him and training him to settle down and hoping that he would grow out of it. But now here he is over a year old, and his resistance to grooming is becoming weaponized. Now, I think you'll recognize what I mean.
Oh, totally.
The mouthiness is no longer playful. He hasn't broken my skin yet, but he's snapped at the scissors. He's snapped at clippers. He's actually bit a clipper last time. And he's getting more serious, and he's resisting with full fervor. So it took us 10 minutes, the two of us, Yvonne and I, 10 minutes to put a muzzle on him in order for me to be able to trim his feet, because he was biting at my hands and the scissors. Just trimming the feet. You know, there's not a lot that you have to do to a Scotty, especially when they're left in full coat, like these people like their Scotty in a full skirt. So you just do a pattern on the back, you trim the feet, you trim the back end, you do the tail, and then you do the head.
Can I interject something here for someone who's really creative? This is a point at which you need to have a muzzle that has a stiff lead so that you can flip it up over the dog's nose with your hands well behind the biting area while it's in the groomer's helper. So that's what I have. I have one of those duck muzzles that has a very stiff leash material, collar material that holds it up, and I can hold it way back and flip it up. But there is nothing on the market specifically made like that, that has a stiffness, a wire, a plastic, a something in there that you're able to hold that muzzle away from your hands, extend it, and flip it from the back of the head where you're safe and get it around the nose.
I had not only problems with his mouth, but problems with his pawing at me, and he opened up my arm with his nails. I can't do his nails. He opened up my arm with his nails, and he's pawing, and it was horrible, Susie. And last time that I groomed him, I told them straightforward, Willis needs a trainer. His behavior is getting worse. It's getting to be unmanageable and unsafe, and you need to take him to a trainer. And they said, okay, who? Because I know that the dog has to be bad at home. He cannot be an angel and be like this. I don't think you could ever take something away from this dog. You know,
I think that this is a new niche, this grooming trainer, like the Christine Neumeyer Smith.
What happened to me is that this dog pushed me over my edge. I wasn't rough on the dog. I didn't hit the dog. But I was dropping the F-bomb in a huge way. And I was just totally undone by this grooming. I could not groom this dog's face. I couldn't groom his ears safely. I'm jabbing at his eyebrows with the scissors. You know, like, ooh, scary. So I said, this is what I did. I reached that point. I have three dogs for these people that I'm grooming, and I'm charging them a total of $250 for three dogs, and it's because all three of them have some kinds of issues and difficulty and time-consuming and matted and disrepair and blah, blah, blah. They don't mind it. They're happy. They love me. They pay. They don't tip, but I kind of have that worked into the price.
Good plan.
You know, so I don't need a tip, and they come every 5 or 6 weeks. And that's a huge financial loss to me at this point, because I've had customers move and dogs die and the Wheaton Terrier left and so on and so forth, and I can't afford to lose this. So I'm sitting there, what am I going to do? But I put it on the line, and I just told them, I was not going to make another appointment for Willis until he had a trainer, because I can't do it by myself. What I can do in one session under stress every 6 weeks is not training. I cannot do that training. I would need to train him every week. They would need to bring him in every week. They're not going to do that. And I'm not trained to deal with that. I have exhausted my ways and means. I mean, even using my groomer's helper, Susie, I was just in danger. He's a danger to myself.
Can I make you feel better as best I can? From the Susie's point of view, from my point of view, looking at it from a business sense, you just lost a liability. That wasn't making you any money anyway. You had to use two of you, even with three dogs. Now, the expense of doing those dogs, which I believe was greater than what you were making off the dogs, even at $250, is negative. So I think that the loss is not going to be as bad as you think, because you're going to find dogs to put in those spots somehow. We're going to get you some new dogs to come into those spots that are going to make you more money for less work.
Well, it was interesting because the whole family, the son who usually does the transporting and the communication, the sister who came in and she had her jaw wired shut, her teeth wired shut because she had a... Oh, this was a horrible thing that happened to her. She was riding in the sidecar, motorcycle sidecar, and her boyfriend went over some kind of debris, and this piece of wood went through her mouth and her jaw, and now she's got this situation where her jaw is sewn shut for 6 weeks.
Wow.
She's already lost 15 pounds, and she's a little nothing. She's a little 100-pound midget lady anyway, you know. She's a little Barbie doll, and now she's losing that, you know. So that was sad, but the elderly mama was out in the back seat of the car, and I went out to the car. I told that it was the daughter that brought the dogs in, and the most difficult thing was that she was under the impression that I had groomed the dog since he was 8 weeks old, because that's when she picked him up. She thought that she picked him up from the breeder and they brought him right to me. But the truth is, they didn't bring him right to me. And I ended up having a little bit of an argument with her about whether or not I groomed the dog. I said, you know, he was at least 6 months old. You know, and she said, well, that can't be because he's not even a year old yet. And I said, but let's not argue about that because that's just background information. And the truth is, I cannot safely groom this dog with these behaviors going on. That's just it. And then we were just going to leave it all kind of up in the air, and I would have had to approach them again to see if they were going to make an appointment or what. So instead of leaving it up in the air, I ran out to the car before they could go away and said, ah, can we have a family meeting here? And they didn't even laugh at my little joke. And mother in the back seat said, yeah, I hear that you refuse to groom Willis anymore. And I said, no, that's not it. I cannot groom Willis until I know that he's got some kind of training that I can coordinate with, you know, because he's being unsafe. And I had sent them the information of a trainer I trusted who I could work with last time. I said, you know, you have that information. This woman is reliable. I trust her. And I can work with her about behavior for the grooming table, as well as, you know, we don't care whether he sits and stays on a leash. We care whether he bites the groomer. This business about training for grooming, it's got to happen. We need it so bad because there's only so much I can do on the grooming table at infrequent intervals. And if they want to seek out another groomer for this Scotty, I'm not going to refer him to one. They can take their chances, and most likely it's going to reaffirm what I've said.
I agree. I think you're doing the right thing there. I do think that there is a place for training on our table, but it has to be, like you said, in conjunction with stuff going on with a trainer. And I think the first step of that would be to have someone who is a trainer come in while you're grooming the dog and watch the behavior, and then they can take that home and work with it for the purposes of making the dog better on the table. Chrissy Neumeyer-Smith, Creating Great Grooming Dogs, will give you some insight for certain. She's got all kinds of training background. She's a trainer who grooms and a groomer who trains. So she requests the owners bring the dog in once a week, even though no actual grooming takes place. And she does the training, but she's got qualifications for that. I don't have that kind of qualification. You don't have that kind of time. I do the best I can with dogs that are willing to come in that often and do that kind of modification. But mostly, I think there needs to be a trainer who works with grooming issues, like a specialty, like a niche market for grooming, for trainers. Gosh, if I could spit the words out.
I know, and I've been trying to tell our training community that for 10 years. I have approached at least 4 trainers saying, look, why don't we work together at developing a, you know, like an And I wrote an article about the behaviors that we needed to work on for grooming. They just don't go there. The last one that I tried sounded like he was going to be amenable, but then he balked because he didn't want to have to buy a grooming table. You know?
I wonder if I could network, reach out to the local trainers, because I don't really have anyone I specifically work with. Maybe I could find somebody who would be willing. Maybe. Because I would love to do that. I would love to learn more about training and also be able to work with some of my more difficult younger dogs. See if I could get them to turn around a little easier for me.
And I have a couple of dogs that I'm doing treat training work on the table that I have some success with. This dog is another thing. He's just like way more strong and resistive. And he's not just doing simple stuff. He's really outside my culpability.
You can watch the switch change. You can watch him flip the switch in the behavior. Like, it's like, stop, stop, and all of a sudden it's, you, and they just switch over like that, and they get pissed off, and you can see the frustration in their eyes, and that's when you've got to back off and come at it a different way or do whatever.
So, yeah. And he's a dog that doesn't accept restraint. See, that's part of the problem. You know, I put him up in the groomer's helper. He just starts screaming, you know, like I'm killing him because I'm restraining his head. And, you know, when you've got the groomer's helper all, and he's all, his head is all attached to the pole, it's real hard to do a Scotty head like that.
Chrissy will do video consultations. I don't know, maybe she would do a lovely video consultation for one of the dogs that you or I do. So we could test that out, because that might help. We could learn some things. But unless the people are willing to bring the dog in more than once every 6 weeks, you're not going to have a huge effect. You'll have a little effect, but not a huge effect. My unexciting week amounted to me thinking about ways to improve the podcast. And I think I have an idea, and I want to bounce it off of you, Barbara. I would like to do I don't want to call it a pledge drive, but a drive for a goal. What I would like is to get 10 more Patreon subscribers. They can even be $1 a month. 10 more listeners to sign up on Patreon. And at that point, I will add Facebook Live to our capabilities. So now, right now, we can only go to YouTube. But if we get 10 more subscribers to Patreon, even $1 a month, even just for 1 month, because I'm not going to look later. You never know. If you guys subscribe 10 new people onto the Patreon group, I will add Facebook Live onto our live shows, and then we'll really get the interaction going. But it does cost extra money. So that's what I kind of came up with. How do you feel about that? Is that an okay deal?
That sounds like a really good deal. I would ask for $2.
Okay.
That's just me and how I would approach that. Because $1 Patreon, that's okay. But $2 is more meaningful for everybody.
All right. 10 more $2 a month subscribers to Patreon
or more.
So I think that's what we'll do, and I'll put it up on the Patreon page. If you guys are already a subscriber to Patreon, you could kick your amount up $2 and let me know you've done that, and I'll go check it, and that would work too. But really, we want 10 new people to come on with $2 a month to support the show, and then we'll add Facebook Live to it. All right, how about another break, Barbara, and then let's come back and talk about Bichon Frise Head, all right?
Okay.
You know, groomers, your salon runs on shampoo and conditioner, and what you choose to bathe with can make or break the quality of your work, productivity, your health, and even your career. Sure, there's a ton of shampoo lines to choose from, but if you haven't tried Best Shot's innovative systems, you may be working too hard. You owe it to yourself to check out BestShotPet.com. Discover firsthand why so many groomers rely on their trusted mastery of coat care chemistry. That's BestShotPet.com. Learn more about using their three-step system and how Best Shot mindfully formulates using advanced grooming technologies, combining the very best nature and science has to offer. Whether it's their three-step system, the one-shot odor annihilator, Ultramax Pro-Line, MED skin treatments, or the amazingly aromatic and fun Sentiment Spa Collection, Best Shot has something tailored just for groomers that really works. For over 25 years, Best Shot has lived up to its claim to get dirty jobs done right, so you can start making masterpieces out of nightmares in record time. What are you waiting for? Contact your favorite distributor or catalog and get some Best Shot today. I love them.
Ready, groomers? Here comes our first appointment. Let's start off with a little Bichon trivia.
Okay.
I always like to do that. So physically, the standard says 9.5 to 11 inches at the withers, 12 to 18 pounds. 18 pounds seems like a pretty big Bichon, but I guess some of the males are probably that big, right?
Yeah, I think that's a bit big. I think my girl is like 12 to 15 pounds.
That was more what I was thinking.
There's a range, you know, and it's interesting because in the show ring, they sort of go from the larger ones who's kind of winning a lot, and then suddenly it'll shift, and those smaller dogs are out of big range.
Right. So speaking of the show ring, here they're a non-sporting dog, but in the UK, they're in the toy breed.
And what's the big difference anyway, you know?
Yeah, good point. They're number 46 in popularity in the American Kennel Club, and I have a little bit of history for you. They originally came from the Barbasset and the Bichon, and they were called a Barbichon originally, way back. Now, we're talking way back, like in the 13th century, like pre-that.
So, hello, Golden Doodle. Hello,
right.
Barbasset. So they were a combination.
A designer dog,
100s of years ago, right?
Yes, yeah, 100. Totally. So they also included, at that point, when they were the Barbichon, they also included Bolognese, Havanese, and Maltese. So the whole big grouping was lumped in. But this is so long ago, back in antiquity. This is a long time ago. In the Canary Islands, of all places. The Canary Islands. So because they came from the Canary Islands, they were sailors' dogs. So they hopped on the boat, they traveled around from island to island, and eventually made their way out into the world that way. And in the 13th century, the nobility found them, and they became nobility lap dogs. And they were loved and cherished until about the French Revolution. And in the French Revolution, all of the nobility got their heads chopped off by the guillotine.
And fuck your little dogs, too.
Indeed. So they expelled them to the streets, and the street people picked them up. And the street performers, who also worked in a circus, gravitated to these smart little outgoing comical little dogs. So they became circus dogs for years, and then the French and the Belgium found them again. There were a few that had been held back there that continued enthusiasts, and they began to flourish again. And do you know what the name actually stands for? What their original name, when they finally changed it when they came to Belgium, was Bichon Appel Frise. Do you know what that means?
Tell me.
It means the Bichon of the curly hair. Because those other Bichons, they didn't have the curly hair. Bolognese, Havanese, Maltese, they all got the straight hair. But the Bichon Frise is the Bichon curly, basically. So there you go. That's my little history. How about a trip down memory lane now, Barbara? I know you've been grooming for a little while, just a touch. So tell me some of the styles that you've seen through the time you've been grooming Bichons.
Well, when I first started grooming Bichons, the style was long beard.
Really?
Yeah, long beard. Rounded head, just a long beard thing, you know, and pretty much just a unformed shape, you know, whatever shape they were just like trimmed to their body, kind of lightly. But they were kind of really thick-coated and with these long beards. And then the Bichon Club of America apparently hired or contracted with a well-known handler, Frank Sabella, who was a renowned poodle handler, really. I know I competed with him in the ring. And he designed a style for the Bichon Frise, which was the round head, the rear angulation, and a much more sculpted trim. What would guide the styles was the handler. So there was a well-known terrier handler who was winning with some Bichons, and he did real straight fronts, like the terriers, like no noticeable protrusion of the front. And that was the style for a while, but that kind of faded away, and then the little bit of front started showing again. It's interesting to follow these little trends that happen with who's winning in the show ring. And the head went from being perfectly round, where the nose was right in the middle of a circle, and so it was equidistant from the bottom of the chin to the top of the crown. It went from that to shorter underneath and higher on the top. The circle wasn't quite in the center anymore. That threw me off for a while.
The ears really just disappear into that round, gigantic ball.
Yeah, the typical of Bichon grooming since the 80s or 90s is having the ears melt into the headpiece so that the ears are not distinguished, unless, of course, they express their ears and hold their ears up, which Bichons do. And some of them have kind of wonky ears that fold in on the back side. Those ears are really hard to get them to work right. I know.
Oh, it drives me crazy. I have enough difficulty doing regular ears, as we all know, because I complain about it quite often, but man, trying to get the wonky ear to then disappear into the head, so frustrating.
Yeah. And my Belle, she has a wonky ear that folds in the back on my bad side.
That figures.
Another thing that was characteristic of the Bichons for years and years now in the show ring is what we call fondly the Bichon ledge, or the little V shape that comes out from the, you know, it's like the baseball cap, but it's V shaped. And it gives them a sense of attitude.
Intensity.
Intensity. And it just gives them a little bit of attitude. And I guess that kind of distinguishes them somewhat from the poodle, and that's what moved them towards the terrierish, more terrierish look, actually, I think. So the problem with the Bichon ledge is that a lot of owners don't like that intense look. They don't like, they think it makes their dog look mean.
I've heard that.
And so They do, so they ask you to soften that and not have it be that extreme. So you go from, you know, and then another part of the Bichon head that's really characteristic is the neck crest. And they have kind of a bowed neck crest. That's another part that's kind of hard to get owners to accept, especially if they walk their dog on a collar and leash. They don't, you know, like that's more neck hair to get matted from the collar. So they don't really like that. But if you don't have an arch, it gives the dog an arch neck, which is again part of the attitude. And if you don't have that, the big head looks like a bobblehead on the skinny neck.
Right? And it looks so like the dog's going to fall over forward.
The big head sort of requires some kind of a bigger neck to balance it.
We can't disappear from memory lane and move on to the actual practical grooming without talking about the gigantic bell head. The bell head.
The bell head was in between the long beard and the round head.
Okay.
So it was just before the round head, but it still acknowledged kind of this longer bearded area. So it became this kind of this bell-shaped head. Yeah, I remember trying to get that. I was glad that that went out before I had to master it.
It looked like a matte magnet with all of this stuff down here. All right, so let's move on to the practical application of putting this beautifully sculpted, curvaceous Bichon head.
Well, so the big Bichon head works really only if you've got a pretty full cut. So you need to have scissored body and sculpted legs, because if they want a shorter cut, the round Bichon head is hard to make it be small. Sometimes it comes out looking like a baby seal.
Yeah, my first modification is whack that neck hair off, because people don't like it where I live. It gets wet and looks bad and tangles up on the harnesses, because we're big into harnesses. Harnesses and a neck crest do not often match together, especially when people leave their harnesses on. So I tighten that down. What else can we do to make it more of a pet clip with the tight body? Because we all know that all my dogs are pretty tight on the body.
Tell you what I've gone for. I went from years being just a die-hard traditionalist, wanting that show dog look, and just shortening everything and keeping the ledge and the crest and everything. And now I'm just like outside the box, and I'm doing Korean-inspired Bichon heads, which is totally different, but the same. It still looks Bichon because there's a full muzzle and some cheeks and that kind of stuff, but it's trimmed, you know, like the ears are trimmed shorter and they can be outside the shape of the face. Before, you would never allow the ears to be distinct from the face. They were part of the face shape. But the Korean styling is just like so cute, and it allows for practically no chin, very short under the jaw, which allows you to small the head a whole lot. The woman that I am inspired by and that I just am fascinated by her videos, it's called Shoe and Tree on YouTube. Shoe, S-H-U, and Tree, T-R-E-E. And she does Bichon ears by just like taking the ears, finding the ear leather, and then just scissoring straight across the bottom of the ear. Makes for very short ears that do not come down to the jawline. And then she either blends the top of the head into that ear shape, or does kind of a little poodle cap where the top of the ears is distinct. And when Susie publishes this week's podcast, we'll put the links to these two YouTube videos that I use a lot in kind of guiding my way into a new type of pet head for Bichons. What you want with Bichons is not to overly scissor the muzzle. because that's when you lose your Bichon expression. And you also want to expose the eyes and do just nice and tight around the actual rim of the eyes so that you could see the pigment of the eyes there. And Korean style is very much no ledge. Maybe just a little bit of shaping there, but it's very owner friendly because it doesn't have a part that's going to grow out and cover their eyes.
Back when I started grooming Bichons and was trying to get the Barbara Bird profile, the few times that I've worked right with you on that, I was using my longest, gentlest curved shears to scissor that dog's head. Now, in today's world, I'm using my Evolution Shears swivel shears or my smaller precision sharp shears that Randy made me that are a sharper edge and a smaller cut shear. So I used to think that I had to scissor up on either side of the head. Is that still true, even with the smaller and the swivel shears? Tips up on one side and also tips up on the other side, as opposed to around one side.
That's just technique. You can do that or not. I don't think that we need to set that in stone.
Oh, good. Thank you for releasing me from that.
Yeah, let me release you from that, because it's the result you want, Susie. I encourage people to watch this Korean groomer. You'll love the videos. And sometimes she takes like 5 minutes to go through the bath and all of that. And she does this strange long-term massage bath that gets a little bit boring.
I fast-forwarded through that.
Yeah, that's why I've actually noted on the video links that I've provided at what minutes the head work starts on either of the two videos. That will save you some time, because that's what we're talking about here. But nonetheless, watching her do the head, it's interesting to see how she works. She uses chunkers a lot.
Okay.
She uses a combination of chunkers and curved scissors. You know, she's just got good technique, and she gets a beautiful result.
Oh, it's adorable.
The Bichon face is still full, but it's not as bulky as that full Bichon round head, and yet you can make it be pretty small without it becoming a baby seal.
And it definitely is easy to balance out with a nice back end, a cute little Bichon butt with a little bit of hair back there and a beautiful tail, and it'll make the dog look spectacular in any length coat.
The scissoring the ears straight across just underneath the ear leather makes those ears real light. They just move real well and very cute, very, very cute looks.
The equivalent of a Dorothy Hamill bob haircut, kind of, the little wedge, the bob. The hair just bounces along, and it's adorable.
Yeah.
I think, we've talked about it before on the show, shorter ears makes the dog look younger. I think longer ears makes the dog look older. Shorter ears makes the dog look younger. This is a way to bring youth to some of those older Bichons that have to be in a, let's call it a senior maintenance cut, where you've got to just kind of take the rest of the body down because they can't tolerate anything else. You could still do this adorable little head Barbara's going to show us. Chew and tree.
You know, and their salon is called the Bow Wow Planet.
Oh, very cute. Well, I'll put that link up when we post this show, and we can discuss further on our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/thegroompod. Meanwhile, we're going to take a break and hear about those Evolution swivel shears, and then move on to our back-to-school segment, where we will start a series of medicated shampoo ingredients. All right, here we go.
Our hands are money makers. We rely on them. How long we last in this career is dependent on how well we care for our hands. Evolution shears were engineered to be the most ergonomic shears out there. They were designed by a team of groomers, sharpeners, and medical professionals with comfort in mind. They started with the observation that all hands were not created equal. In fact, they are all unique and have different needs. Evolution shears are fully customizable with adjustable sizing and your choice of fixed ring, single, or double swivels. I recommend the double swivels. They're my personal favorites. Evolution shears work with your thumb in its natural position, making scissoring in all directions a pleasure. They are made to prevent repetitive stress injuries that occur due to scissoring and keep you from grooming. Lastly, they use high-quality materials but are affordable. They come in curves, straights, thinners, and chunkers, and in a variety of lengths and edges. A good thing for those of us with scissor addictions. There is a learning curve, but don't worry. The staff at Evolution will hold your hand through the whole process. Their customer service is tip-top. You can put your hands on a pair of Evolution shears and say hi to Abby, Ron, and our favorite salesperson, Chris Anthony, at many of the grooming shows. But if you're in a hurry, and you should be, go online to evolutionshears.com or call them at 877-560-3057 and buy yourself a pair or two. Be sure to ask for Chris because she'll take great care of you. But wait, if you act now... Okay, you don't have to act right now, but mention the Groom Pod when you place your order or put Groom Pod in the coupon code on the Evolution website and you will receive $10 off each pair of shears. How cool is that?
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule.
Groomers, take your seats. School is about to begin.
We're going to talk medicated shampoos. Put on your lab coat and your stethoscope and all those important... Okay, well, maybe not stethoscope. But put that lab coat on and take us through ketoconazole.
Well, ketoconazole, I kind of fell on that today. I went to Amazon and I searched for medicated dog shampoos. And then I looked at it. It seemed like every other one was a chlorhexidine plus ketoconazole formula. It was like 2% chlorhexidine glutamate and then 1% ketoconazole. And I thought, well, I'm just going to look into that a little bit. And I understand the reason for doing that.
Good, because I was just going to ask.
Yeah, the reason is that chlorhexidine glutamate, chlorhexidine is a broad spectrum antibiotic, antifungal substance, but it's not a very good antifungal. It's a great antibacterial, but not a very good antifungal. It has some antifungal activity, but adding the ketoconazole boosts the antifungal activity up to a better place. So it makes it more well balanced. Now, the downside of the ketoconazole is that there can be dogs that have an irritation and or an allergic reaction to the ketoconazole. You're not going to have that with the chlorhexidine. Practically no one has a bad reaction to the chlorhexidine. It's a very safe all-purpose medicated ingredient for groomers to use. But if you're working on a dog that you think has a fungal activity going on, or the vet has said it's got a fungal thing, you might want to go to a combination chlorhexidine and ketoconazole. Ketoconazole was one of the first azole ingredients to be discovered and to be utilized. And in terms of oral medications and other, well, let's just say, in terms of oral medications for fungal things, some other azoles have been discovered and utilized and brought into the picture, kind of pushing out ketoconazole. But for dog topicals, ketoconazole seems to be still pretty widely used.
Is this an ingredient that will show up in its own shampoo without the chlorhexidine?
Sometimes it shows up in sprays and ointments without the other, but the two often, especially in pet owner oriented marketplaces, you're going to find them together pretty much. There's oftentimes something else, you know, like an aloe. Interestingly enough, Davis, you know, Davis Manufacturing.
Yes.
Davis Manufacturing. They have a keto hexidine shampoo that's 2% chlorhexidine, 1% keto conazole, and colloidal oatmeal. That's interesting because there is a debate as to whether oatmeal feeds fungus.
Still?
Apparently. Yeah, well, I can't personally get rid of it. The professional source of this assertion is Dr. What's-Her-Name.
Oh, good old Dr. What's-Her-Name.
Oh, good Dr. What's-Her-Name. Karen Becker, Dr. Becker, who works for, what's-His-Name. So Dr. Becker is a naturopathic veterinarian who asserts that colloidal oatmeal feeds fungus, but there's really not a whole lot of science to back that up. I don't want to go into that, but I'm just going to say I had a funny time chasing down these or looking at these medicated veterinary products on Amazon because I get so distracted by the marketing. Susie, I cannot help it. The Stratford Animal Health Keto C, which was one that I looked at, made in the USA, all natural. And then they claim that it's quality controlled because it's approved by the National Animal Supplement Council, the NASC. Now, really, what does that have to do with a medicated shampoo? And trying to say that a medicated shampoo with chlorhexidine glutenate and ketoconazole is all natural. It's just like
horse pucky.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're
and
welcome.
And then I looked at this Pet Honesty. This is a nice new a brand. Pet Honesty, antibacterial and fungal with aloe. And it's another 2% chlorhexidine, 1% ketoconazole, and these people list, unfortunately for them, they list their non-active ingredients.
Yeah.
Look at this octophenyl ethylene oxide. It's just a cousin to the non-phenyl things that we don't. It's a phosphorylated ingredient, and it's a questionable ingredient because it's been associated as an endocrine disruptor.
We don't need that.
An animal hormone disruptor. Now, I don't have what it takes to track that down as to whether that's the truth or not, but why do they need to put that in their shampoo base? It has some kind of, this octophenyl ethylene oxide has some history in veterinary medicine.
Oh.
And it's just, you know, it's just like gone along into this shampoo, and I don't know why they needed to do that. So there again, you see, I get distracted by this kind of stuff. Now, there's another antifungal that we might want to mention that has somewhat replaced ketoconazole, and that's myconazole.
Yes.
So myconazole is newer. You know, ketoconazole was discovered in the 80s or something. You know, myconazole is newer and also appears associated with chlorhexidine glutenate. So I tried to do a little research at what was the difference and why would you prefer one over the other. And what I gather is that the ketoconazole may have a slightly greater number of unfortunate reactions than the myconazole. The myconazole is less likely to cause a rash, an irritation, or an allergic reaction. Ketoconazole can actually cause, in unusual circumstances, can cause a significant allergic moment, but less so than myconazole.
Maliseb veterinary shampoo from, I think it's DVM. Maliseb is one of the most common prescribed out there for this stuff. And guess what's in it? Myconazole and chlorhexidine. Cool.
So actually today we kind of covered ketoconazole, chlorhexidine, and myconazole.
Right? Excellent work, Barbara. We should get extra pay for that. Yeah. Okay. Another quick break and we will finally get to that question that has had us on the edge of our seats for weeks. And it is, when do you pay the vet bill?
So, Barbara, what's new over at show season? I got an inkling. A little bird told me there might be something coming down the pipeline. What is it?
Yeah, I'm excited because show season now has hemp conditioner. So we've already reviewed and appreciated the hemp shampoo that they have. It's a non-sulfate shampoo, seems to be very mindfully formulated. And in the past, what we would do if we wanted to have additional conditioning, more serious conditioning, we would use their hypo conditioner. But now they have a conditioner that's been formulated to match up with the hemp shampoo made by the same formulator. So that's exciting. I'm looking forward to trying that. I just got wind of it. So we'll try some out and get back to you on that.
I love this about show season. They're always looking for ways to better the products. They're looking for new things they can infuse in there. They're so willing to work with our ideas, and they're just great people over there, aren't they?
They really are, and they really do listen to groomers, and they're always upgrading and improving and adding to, and if there's a certain fragrance that you just got to have in a shampoo, you need to tell them about it.
Yeah, that's cool because they are also environmentally thoughtful, and they're trying to keep their local sources, and yeah, no, they're great people. And if you guys want to support a great company like Show Season that supports the Groom Pod, you can do so by going to their website, showseasongrooming.com. And if you haven't already, set up your wholesale account and do that on the phone. Their phone number is 678-382-0218, or email if you already have their setup. But really, they're at lots of local distributors. They're all over the place. I think that they're at Groomers Mart, but I know that they're at Cascade Grooming Supply.
Let's see what's happening at the grooming table. We all know that you should definitely pay the vet bill when you cause an obvious injury, but what other situations might you need to pay the vet bill in? Let's talk about that for a moment. You know, you cut an ear, you cut a tongue, something bleeds. That's a pretty immediate thing. It's obvious right there. You caused the injury. You need to follow up with the veterinary care on the animal. But what about some of the secondary stuff like skin and ears and nicked warts and weird stuff? Do we pay the vet bills? Do we challenge our clients when they ask us to pay the vet bills? What do you think?
I think that you need to not just dismiss the possibility. When the client calls you, what's important not to do is just get defensive and say, oh no, he was fine when he walked out of here. It can't be blah, blah, blah. I'm not going there. Impossible. No, don't do that. You may have that going on in your head, but if you want to make it work with the client, it's important to not just dismiss their claim that it was related to the grooming. You need to open your mind to the possibility that it might have been related to the grooming. Let's look at that, okay? Because some things can happen. One of the things that we know can happen is that dogs can get a skin infection under the right circumstances from a diluted shampoo that has remained in use for greater than, say, 48 hours.
And this isn't going to show up right away.
And that's the kind of infection that takes a while to develop. Several days even, you know. So you cannot say just because the dog looked fine walking out of your shop that you had nothing to do with it, because it can happen. And It's all the more reason, of course, to dispose of diluted shampoos that you don't use during the day or at least 2 days.
Something that seems like it's going to be a minor issue, like a little bit of itchiness on the dog because maybe it wasn't rinsed well enough, is compounded by nail trims against raw skin, and then days later you've got a horrible staph infection that was actually caused by the grooming, but doesn't really appear to be something that you caused. And Barbara, you're so right. Don't get defensive on this stuff. These are your clients. Sometimes you need to bite the bullet and pay the bill, even if it's questionable. And some of those questionable,
Yeah, and sometimes dogs have allergic reactions to shampoos, and that does not always show up right away. An allergic reaction can take a day or two or three to develop. The antibodies and all of that kind of happening internally, the allergic reaction, a skin irritation from not rinsing well, or having a shampoo that's too harsh on a skin that's maybe ultra sensitive or thin or fragile or not healthy, that shows up pretty much right away. But an allergic reaction can take a day or two or more to develop. A skin infection, a follicular infection can take time to develop. So you need to stay open to that. And, you know, what I've done in some cases is offer to pay half.
A compromise.
Yeah, a compromise. So the idea is when you get involved in the conversation, whether it's a conversation on the phone or a conversation by text or email, you want to stay focused on what will be a solution. What will make this be what will make this be better? What will make this be so that we can move forward together? And sometimes that involves you taking some responsibility by offering to pay some of that vet bill. And if, you know, like don't, and I think it's a mistake to make the vet blame you.
I agree.
Do you know what I'm saying? I think that's not right.
How about?
Hold off. If the vet says I did it, I'll pay. No, just look, it could be possible. Let's take a look at that. Let's talk with the vet. Let's split it. Let's, you know.
Some of that gray area revolves around things like hematomas. Part of the responsibility of the dog's hematoma falls on that owner. But you're the person who's shaving the hair off, and then you can see there's going to be an issue before the dog even leaves your shop. But you feel, but it's easy to get defensive in that case because the person who gave you the dog to groom left the matting on there for too long. This is a difficult situation. Yeah. How do you navigate that?
First of all, let's be clear to our listeners what we're talking about. We're talking about ear. We're talking about hematoma or bruises and swelling and distortions of the ear that are caused by the blood pooling in the bottom of the ear leather, often either because of matting that has been closing off circulation, and then all of a sudden there's circulation and the blood rushes to the bottom of the ear, causes a big swelling, and the dog starts to shake their head, and it just makes it worse and worse and worse. So if there's any suspicion that there might, if the dog shows any indication of shaking the head, which makes it happen, is the worst thing. You need to either wrap the head with vet wrap or a sock over the, you
know, happy hoodie.
A happy hoodie, send them home with one. I mean, like for $12.
Ace bandage.
You're gonna, an ace bandage, like something that presses the ear to the head so they can't shake the blood down into it. So if you sense any tendency that that's going to go on. Or if you have shaved an ear that has been so matted, I mean tight, tight matted, that you're amazed that you can even get a blade under it, you might want to wrap that head as a precautionary basis to avoid that problem. Now, let's say you didn't avoid the problem.
Yeah, and make sure you have a conversation with the owner. But if you don't have that conversation and you end up in the situation.
And you end up in the situation, you know, because sometimes a couple of things can happen. The vet is going to have to open up that ear tissue and remove the excess fluid, and or the dog could end up with a cauliflower ear, a bent, screwed up ear. And I had that happen with the other Scotty that my customers had. And it wasn't on my watch. It wasn't related to grooming in any way, but the dog got a hematoma and the vet had to lance it. And the dog ended up with, instead of a pricked ear, he had a curled up cauliflower ear.
Oftentimes they have to sew X's into the ear to keep the blood from going back into the ears. They can also put pads on either side and sew those through into the ears. It requires several visits for care. It's partially the person's responsibility who didn't brush the ear out, but it is also part of your responsibility for maybe, if, I don't know, is it part of your responsibility? I guess that's my question.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, let's say, so there is that. So you do everything you can to prevent and talk about that with the owners before you send them out the door so that they're aware that the neglect that happened on the dog's ear then could create this problem. And that will probably head off the vet bill, probably, especially if they're a good client and they knew that they did leave the ears fully matted. So ear infections, those come up, and they are a constant battle between groomers, owners, and veterinary industry, just by nature of ears, water, and infections. Pseudomonas aeruginosa, our enemy in the grooming shop, is ever present in those ear infections, and it makes stinky, nasty, yucky ears. Is that our fault? Do we have to pay for that?
Well, it's related to grooming. And, you know, actually, I think we need to be willing to assume some responsibility for that.
Okay.
And I know this is an area, this whole business about what does the groomer do with the ears, it's an area where you and I differ.
Yes.
Because you still pluck ears and I don't.
Far less, though.
And I have not had a dog come in with an ear infection that was suspiciously connected to grooming in 5 years. And it's not that I never, ever pluck anything, but I rarely pluck, and I do not do it on all dogs. I will shave inside the ear. I will, you know, so there again, canine dermatologists have identified that plucking the ear creates an opportunity for bacterial infection, including Pseudomonas aeruginosa, which can be very difficult to cure. You know, it's a difficult infection. So I am reducing the opportunity for that to happen in my grooming. And if the people insist that I do it, I explain that this could create the very problem that we're trying to avoid.
A couple other areas can be questionable for us, and that is pre-existing conditions with knees. Knees can be a problem with grooming, and you need to be aware of that. And also skin problems that are pre-existing. And we have a perfect way these days to combat against that. And that's this little magical device that we carry around that has a camera in it. We've all got one. Take pictures of the problem before you start the grooming to head off unnecessary vet visits. Any other words of advice from you, Barbara, before we head on our merry little way for the day?
I think that, you know, if you have good client relationships, you are less likely to be assaulted with vet bills. I have people who will tell me months later, oh, we had this happen and we paid the bill, and they don't even expect me to pay the bill because by and large they trust me. You know, it's more likely to happen with owners that you don't have a solid relationship, and especially, unfortunately, new people.
I agree with that. Oh, so glad you mentioned that.
You know, I'm not going to let a customer blackmail me into paying their vet bill, but I am not going to let a vet bill ruin my reputation. It's just not worth it, and it's a cost of doing business.
I agree. Pay the bill when there's any question.
Because we don't have like $500 floating around, you know. But on that note, it doesn't hurt. They have a little savings account hidden away, tucked away somewhere, where you can accumulate $300 to $500, stick it in there for that time when there's a vet bill.
It's wise business, you're right. I fully back that, Barbara. Yeah. I like that business sense that you're spitting out right there. And more business sense today to be dished out. I have to go make some money. There we go, business sense in that way. Okay, Barbara, thank you for your time as always. Thanks for being here, everyone. We will be back next week on the Groom Pod, and we will discuss another medical shampoo ingredient and lots of other fun stuff too. Remember, join up on Patreon and we'll get live Facebook going on top of our live YouTube. See you next week on the Groom Pod. Happy grooming. Bye-bye.
Okay, and listen, groomers, let me know what particular medicated ingredients you're interested in having me cover. Okay, because there's an awful lot out there, and almost all medicated shampoos these days are combination products. So let me know what your burning desire is, okay?
Bye!
Bye!
Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at The Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.
Grooming, and I'm charging them a total of $250.